Welcome to the Docs Who Lift podcast, where we distill and simplify the complexities of a healthy lifestyle, exercise, medicine, and weight loss. We're excited to bring you a podcast that's a prescription for clinical practice, scientific recommendations, and just real life. This is the Docs Who Lift podcast.
Hey, and welcome back to the Docs Who Lift podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Spencer Nadolski. Got my co-host, Dr. Kyle Nadolski Jr.
Hey.
Endocrinologist.
Another exciting week.
Another exciting week. We have a few podcasts that we've done, but we wanted to get this one done because it's all about the SELECT trial. You may have seen my brother, and we were on the news, both of us at the same time on some random.
But that
channels.
Wasn't for this. That was for Zepbound.
Oh, that was for Zepbound. Yeah, never mind. What am I talking about?
Well, this was presented and published over the weekend. I think we were on the news
we did.
Friday.
Yeah.
So yeah, we were on the news live, different local news channels or something, talking about the new approval that we published last week. It was literally the same day we published.
We already did
podcast on.
I'm losing it. These things are happening so quickly. Yeah. So yeah, Zepbound's out, but now we have some data that, semaglutide, which everybody should remember, is Wegovy for obesity, Ozempic for type 2 diabetes. We already have cardiovascular trial outcomes for semaglutide specifically for those with type 2 diabetes. But now this is the first trial. In fact, it's called Semaglutide and Cardiovascular Outcomes in Obesity Without Diabetes. They're very specific about this. It's the first trial.
So this is the first one for any obesity-specific medication, not for specific cardiovascular risk reduction per se, like statins and things like that, not for diabetes therapy, not in diabetes. But this is the first obesity-specific medication studied for, at least, and having results
like,
for.
Like made for cardiovascular, yeah. Like made yeah. to
we,
look
we
at
had,
cardiovascular
We had events. Some for, we had a trial for lorcaserin, which ended up off the market anyways. That was essentially neutral. And we had a big trial for naltrexone bupropion, known as Contrave, that did look favorable when they first released it. And that's what got it approved, even just for safety. But unfortunately, and I'm sure we talked about this on another podcast.
Yeah, we did.
The data were leaked, and you can't do that. It compromises the trial. And so ultimately they had to stop the trial. And
really
now we don't really know if it has benefits per se. It certainly looked safe, but that's not the point. The point is, this is a big deal.
This is your big boy.
Because, all medications, and this goes back to all those risk factors we talk about. So obesity is the underlying driving force of a lot of the cardiovascular risk we think about, the insulin resistance, dysglycemia, diabetes, hypertension, dyslipidemia, and then some of the genetic things we can't do much about, like some of the blood pressure and atherosclerotic lipids, lipoproteins, cholesterol that people are familiar with that are treated with statins, et cetera, that have been shown to reduce risk of heart attacks, strokes, cardiovascular events over the years. And so we don't care if it helps sugars get better, helps blood pressure get better, helps lipids get better necessarily. We care if that results in actually improving people's lives, reducing those events. So that's why these studies are really important for these types of medications.
Yeah, there have been some other drugs in the past that looked really promising for things like lipids and
diabetes.
Else.
That's how this all started, was back in the 2000s when there were medications shown to improve sugars and diabetes. But then there were some concerns raised that maybe they were actually bad for heart outcomes. And so now the FDA mandates these cardiovascular outcome trials for diabetes medications.
People don't trust the FDA, but I tell you what, they're at least trying to.
There are reasons it's there.
Whatever. Anyway, all right, semaglutide, SELECT trial, big news. The top line results came out. We talked about it back in August, 20% reduction in their composite cardiovascular events. But we're going to get into the details of what kind of drove the events. Basically, just to blurt it out there, it was a decrease in non-fatal heart attacks.
Heart attacks and overall death too. So give a little background so people know what this is. So again, people did not have type 2 diabetes, but there were a lot of people in this study. and it takes a lot of people.
17,000 people.
Yes, 8,800 in each arm. So 8,800 got semaglutide titrated up to the full dose. 8,800 got a placebo. Their average age was 62 years old. 72% were male, 84% Caucasian, 10% Hispanic, 8% Asian, 4% Black. Their average mass, 97 kilograms, which it always seems like all these trials, the average is always around like 100 kilograms. Yeah. So it makes those percentages easy somehow. The BMI was between 33, 34. Waist circumference was 111 centimeters. Like I said, nobody had type 2 diabetes, but two-thirds actually had a hemoglobin A1C, but above or equal to 5.7, which is in a pre-diabetes range. And so then the overall average A1C, if people are familiar with what that means, was about 5.8%. So the average was kind of just into a pre-diabetes sort of sugar issue with their obesity and heart disease.
What about, talk about what constituted the history of cardiovascular disease and how they got into the trial.
So in this trial, because the higher the risk, the more events you're going to see and the more you will be able to see if there's
heart
benefit versus safety. Yeah. The events we're looking at.
Yeah. What are the
outcomes?
Ones that they were measuring? Yeah.
Okay. So they're looking at non-fatal MI, non-fatal stroke, and cardiovascular death.
Yeah. So those are the three things that they're looking at for what we call primary outcome.
Yeah. So the people in this study had a history of heart attack. 68% had a history of heart attack. 18% had a history of stroke. 4% had something called peripheral artery disease, and 8% actually had two or more of those criteria. And then I think something really important with this is we actually talk about what kind of medications those people were on, because we just talked about how other medications have been shown to reduce cardiovascular events and are essentially really standard of care, right? So almost 90% were on some sort of like aspirin or Plavix.
Yeah.
Right. Nice. So the platelet stuff to reduce heart attacks. Like, so everyone who has heart disease has to be on something like that. Now, what's always interesting in all these trials that are ever done, it's like not everyone's on everything they're supposed to be yeah, for whatever reason. You know what I mean? But that's just kind of shows like how we have some issues in healthcare. Right. I mean, it's just not perfect. 88, almost 90% of people were on a statin. And their non-HDL was 109. So again, not perfect for people with heart disease. I mean, we would definitely want that lower.
What was their LDL?
You know what? I don't think I had their LDL because
I was around 70 or something.
Non-HDL. Because remember, these people had obesity, dysglycemia. Here, I can.
Well, whatever. It doesn't matter.
90% of people were on statins. Almost 15% of people were on. Ezetimibe also helping with their cholesterol. Like just a couple of people around those special PCSK9 inhibitors.
So these are drugs that look for anybody listening. These are drugs that lower your ApoB containing lipoproteins or LDL cholesterol, non-HDL cholesterol, the particles that cause atherosclerosis. So these
LDL was 78.
So 78. So that's
pretty good.
Actually, not even really not discordant from the.
No, actually, yeah. But technically we'd want it a little bit lower. But again, this is big, huge study, not perfect, but pretty darn good. And a lot of people were on very good blood pressure medications to get their...
So relatively controlled individuals who have had a history of cardiovascular disease enrolled in this without type 2 diabetes, but looks like they have an average of pre-diabetes, just slight pre-diabetes, mind you, likely insulin resistance there for most everybody as well. And so they're basically testing, does this drug help reduce the events that are going to occur?
Yeah, the things we actually care
placebo.
About.
Versus
Even,
placebo.
You know, we talk about losing weight. Well, who cares about the weight? We care about literally, we always talk about it. It's what's on the inside that counts. Are we actually getting some health benefits out of this?
And we're going to get into what happened basically. Is it the drug or this? So go over the results. What happened?
So, they followed people on treatment for an average about 34 months. So that's also an important note that this was a long-term trial, right? It was almost 3 years of being on medication.
I thought it was more than 3 years.
Well, it was the overall follow-up was 40 months. So
The
treatment, 34 months on average, overall follow-up, 40 months. And they did monitor their weight for basically 2 years. And the semaglutide group lost 9.5% of their weight versus just 0.9% in the placebo group. So I think we should talk about that because that's actually a little interesting because it's less than some of the other trials in this?
So step one trials showed around a 15 or a little bit more percent average body weight loss. Do you remember what the average starting weight was and BMI was for step one? I believe it was similar, but
it's similar. Yeah. A little bit higher, but
now
similar.
This one's more men. And for whatever reason, men lose less weight on these medicines. We don't know why. Nobody knows why.
Yeah.
Women, and usually, you know, usually when, you know, there's memes about this, like the husband will basically cut out French fries in their diet and they'll lose 20 pounds. Everybody talks about this. The wife will talk about, the woman will look at something and gain 20 pounds and basically be starving herself. That's the joke. It's not necessarily true. It's just what happens.
That's what people say. Yeah.
That's what they say. So, and so everybody says, you know, men just lose weight easier. And for whatever reason in these drugs, they've done these sub-analyses and they don't know exactly why, but for whatever reason, women actually lose more weight than men on average. They don't know why. They have to do more studies in this. So,
and there's probably some other factors. I mean, you know, like when we look at the semaglutide and other drugs in type 2 diabetes, people with type 2 diabetes don't lose as much weight. Now, this was not the case in this trial, right? They didn't have type 2 diabetes. They had prediabetes, which is the same as in a lot of the other trials. However, all those other trials don't have people with established heart disease. So I think that's something that might play a role. A lot of the people were on beta blockers. That's maybe playing a role. 70% of people were on beta blockers with good blood pressure, mind you, but that, you know, plays some role. So there are probably some other things that we could dig into, and hopefully someone who's really good at these statistical analyses will
figure it out. Step one, you said the body mass index of this was 34. The body mass index of step one was an average of almost 38.
37, yeah, that's what I thought.
It was almost 38, and it was 73% women.
Yeah, so it's different. All those, this is one of the only trials for an obesity medicine where I've seen more men in it. I don't think I've ever seen that. Now, you know, off the top of my head.
Hemoglobin A1C was 5.7 though in step one. So,
it was very similar.
Not that.
Because they looked at diabetes prevention in that and not, you know, they didn't have type 2 diabetes.
Now,
in that.
Coronary disease was 2.5%.
Right. They did. It was very low. Usually they avoid people with established heart disease in all those other trials.
So is it possible there's something about coronary disease that may decrease? I don't know.
We can come up with all sorts of things, right? I don't know. I said, the beta blockers, maybe they don't have as much physical activity. Their metabolism isn't you know, like the people. And remember, this is similar degree of severity of just overall health disease as like type 2 diabetes. So even though they didn't have type 2 diabetes, these are severe ramifications of obesity and cardiometabolic disease, heart disease, type 2 diabetes. So maybe just that milieu is a correlative thing. But we don't know. We're not saying we know. We're just throwing stuff out
there. Yeah. It's the step 2. So step 2 trial, though, was done in those with type 2 diabetes. Yeah. And they lost, it was somewhere around 10 or 11%.
Yeah, it was very similar to this.
Similar to this. So, I don't know. Anyway,
take that in with a grain of salt and then let's get to the bottom line. So there was a little bit of glycemic benefit. Certainly, obviously there were some people who had prediabetes. They had an A1C reduction of 0.3 versus 0%. There was a little bit better blood pressure in the semaglutide group, -4 mg/Hg versus -0.5. There was a lipid benefit. You know, they had 18% triglyceride reduction versus just -3 in the placebo, an overall non-HDL reduction of 10 mg/dL versus -1. So there's, you know, lipid cardiovascular cholesterol benefits. But then the bottom line, and we need to talk about context because it's the percent of people over those 3 years who had an event, right? So cardiovascular death, non-fatal MI, non-fatal stroke was 6.5% versus 8% in the placebo group. So, you know, that was a very statistically significant overall benefit for being on the medication. But those are the numbers for this. Cardiovascular death was 2.5% versus 3%. Any death was 4.3% versus 5.2%. Heart attack was 2.7% versus 3.7%. Stroke wasn't very different. It was 1.7% versus 1.9%. So these don't sound like huge numbers, but people have to, you know, you have to understand kind of the context. And remember, they were on medications known to reduce those events. For example, I went back and looked at an old pravastatin trial in high-risk cardiovascular disease. And it was, it reduced cardiovascular outcomes. It was 14 versus 16%. So there were more events in those. They weren't as well treated, you know, as in this. for what it's worth.
I mean, to me, I think it's like, okay, first, they're clearly not worsening effects. People, I know, right. We call this the Peter Attia hater podcast, just because he has pontificated what's going on with these increases in heart rates that we see.
Right, and there was a little increase in heart rate by a few beats per minute.
So, despite increases in heart rate, there are decreases in cardiovascular events, and driven by the non-fatal MI. I believe it was 28% fewer
relative NSTEMIs. Yeah, and that's a relative risk reduction. This the statistics of these things get confusing, I think, for doctors and people listening to it on the news. That's why I use those kind of the absolute risk comparisons for people
relative
to see.
The placebo group, 28% decrease.
And so, but you know, I mean, certainly numerically improvements in cardiovascular death, just any type of death, and a significant reduction in heart attacks. You know, and similar to those other trials. So, you know, liraglutide, known as Victoza in type 2 diabetes and established heart disease, you know, had similar benefits. The numbers were higher. So they had a reduced cardiovascular outcome overall of 13 versus 15% in the LEADER trial. You know, and so those are just higher overall numbers. They had a negative or a 4.7% cardiovascular death compared to 6%. You know, and then we could talk about SUSTAIN, which is semaglutide and diabetes. I know that gets a little dry, but it sounds small, but in the big picture, we're talking about continued improvement in these people's residual risk. You know, statins are going to reduce the risk. Blood pressure reduction is going to reduce the risk. Aspirin, Plavix is going to reduce the risk of these things. On top of all that stuff, getting 10% weight reduction with semaglutide has a statistically significant of reducing these cardiovascular outcomes for people with obesity and heart disease.
Let's talk about the graph and how they separated quickly.
How it separated. That is pretty interesting. Okay, so let me pull that up a second explain why that matters. We talk about this with SGLT2 inhibitors like Jardiance and Farxiga, because that was really interesting for a lot of people back in the day when that happened. Just because when we talk about these curves separating, it's when you look at those numbers on a graph and you can see it, you can visualize, well, when did the benefit really start to be noticeable? And in heart disease trials with, say, like statins and stuff like that, it takes a long time for it to separate, meaning it's probably like the plaques, the atherosclerotic disease. In SGLT2 inhibitor trials, where there's like a dramatic, immediate improvement in the risks, you see that separation immediately. And it's kind of interesting in this, I think, that everyone's talking about, is that while it's a gradual splitting of placebo and semaglutide over time for just the primary cardiovascular composite endpoint, you do see it very early on, like almost immediately. Heart failure, by the way.
They didn't have a ton of weight. They didn't have as much weight loss as we expected.
Right. And certainly not at the beginning.
There's something, the look ahead trial, we've talked about this before. They've tried to do this before with diet and exercise and see if there's an improvement in cardiovascular events. They didn't show it for what they call the primary outcome, but they looked at subgroup post hoc analyses and looked at those who lost 10%. Of their weight in that trial, and it looked like there was a benefit.
Yeah.
But they can't make the claim. It just looks like, looks like there's probably. So they thought maybe if people lost 10% of the weight, then we could maybe start seeing it. But people don't lose 10% of their weight right away. It takes time to lose weight. And they didn't, in this trial, on average, they didn't even lose 10%. It was close. It was very
close.
Although,
you know, the curve kept splitting as it went on for the overall outcome. I mean, including death and everything like that.
So our point is that there is very likely something about this drug that is having an effect on cardiovascular disease, atherosclerosis, and maybe plaque stabilization. I don't know.
Well, and they talk about GLP receptors on the heart and stuff like that. So hopefully these are all good things.
We talked about this back in August when we were pontificating what's going to happen and what is going to be the weight loss with the drug. We talked about something called the Harmony.
Pontificating.
Look at that on the Docs Who Live podcast. Oh, we're not just meatheads. We know a little something about some vocabulary. Our parents were teachers. I don't even know what I was. The Harmony trial. We were going to talk about the Harmony. Remember the Harvard trial? It was the drug, it was the GLP-1 that barely caused any weight loss despite having
albiglutide. Yeah, it was not a very great medicine for weight and glycemic control.
But hey, it had cardiovascular.
It had a good cardiovascular outcome trial, which was really interesting to a lot of people.
Very interesting. So. Anyway, well, honestly, who cares? Like, in my opinion, like the drug decreases cardiovascular risk. Yeah. I'm glad it doesn't increase. There are some other things about this trial that I was really excited for because
maybe
it's long
more importantly to some people,
because of all the
scaremongering done by people like Peter Attia and the media, because they're trying to scare people away from this medication. And while we certainly tell people that. People should not be using any of these meds for vanity reasons. The higher the risk you have from your obesity, diabetes, heart disease, etc., the more benefit you're going to get. That's literally why they tried it in people with established heart disease. Like, you can tell these people are at high risk. But anyways, so that's where the benefit comes. If you don't have any risk, if you don't have obesity, you shouldn't be on the medication.
Yeah,
safety is darn good in this trial. This is a huge trial to look at cardiovascular events, and so looking at safety signals is really beneficial in these trials.
Yeah, so let's talk about what they saw, because everybody talks about first. I think the big one is pancreatitis. Everybody worries about pancreatitis.
Pancreatitis, that has been a concern with all these medications for a long time. Some trials and observational data bring it up, but I'll tell you, every one of these cardiovascular outcome trials seems to reassure us. So pancreatitis in this huge trial. Almost like 8,800 people in each arm over
in each
3 years.
Huge.
Pancreatitis was 0.2% in the semaglutide group and 0.3% in the.
But talk about how many. The there were like 17 and 24.
Well, it was,
right?
Yeah,
something
like
that.
Yeah, it was like very small numbers. That's, very, very low numbers. Other things. So the other concern, because of the rats and their GLP receptors on their, the thyroid cells, I guess I'll just say, and the concern of that medullary thyroid cancer, that's come up. So malignant neoplasms, right?
Yeah.
Well, malignant neoplasms were basically the same. And this could be from anything, right? So, but 4.8 versus 4.7% of those people had developed some sort of malignant neoplasm.
Yeah, and we don't know the subgroups of those neoplasms. I actually messaged someone from the Novo team. We can get that data.
We should
get the data. Let's just see.
I mean, the reason they were even looking at that was for medullary thyroid cancer. I'm surprised they didn't put that in the supplement.
I know. I want to see it.
Interesting now that I say that, I wrote down that there was, for all neoplasms, there was 4.6%. How can there be more malignant neoplasms than just overall neoplasms? That's weird.
It might be the number versus the percent.
Anyways, acute kidney injury was actually lower, 1.9% versus 2.3% in the semaglutide group. And then the one thing we know from all the meta-analyses is that there is a little bit of a hint of increased gallbladder issues in these medications. But even this was only 2.8 versus 2.3%. So.
People lose weight. We've talked about this before. Whether these drugs have some sort of effect on the specific gallbladder, which may affect function, which may increase risk of stone formation, because if you're not, moving the bile around in your gallbladder, I don't know. But when you lose weight quickly, the mixture of the salts and the cholesterol within it can modify and start forming stones. And so when you lose weight quickly, that's the concern. And I've seen it before. Patients are like, I got to go get a cholecystectomy. But whether it's from the drug or the weight loss, hard to know because this is the first time we're seeing like really massive amounts of weight loss with these drugs.
Yeah. So overall, serious adverse events just in general, and that includes, of course, cardiac disorders, but it was statistically significantly reduced in the semaglutide group.
There were reduced infections.
Yes, reduced surgical and medical procedures, whatever that entails, reduced respiratory, thoracic, and mediastinal disorders. I mean, these are, and I'm just noting these because these are the very statistically significant things.
Yeah.
So just overall, reduced.
Maybe a little bit less adipose tissue that can, maybe less insulin resistance to that can wound healing. I don't even know. I'm not
you
sure.
know, another one that's important is the psychiatric disorders, and that really wasn't different either.
I couldn't see it. Where was it?
It was down in the serious adverse events.
And what did
area.
It say?
Just it was so that the exact numbers were 33 versus 25 people, so 0.4% versus 0.3%, not statistically significant by any means.
And we don't know what that means. Like so,
well, in this it means nothing. There was no increase.
No, I mean, like it would be interesting to know what they define that.
Yeah.
But like because everybody's worried about suicidal ideations.
Yeah, that's
look,
what I mentioned.
You know, we've had tens of thousands at our program at Weight Watchers. You know, and I monitor for these things, and you know, there's mood waxes and wanes in people. Usually, sometimes these medicines, they are anxiolytic. They decrease anxiety in people. Very rarely do I see anybody that says, "No, this drug has absolutely affected my mood." But you know, these are things. There's the European, the agency over there. They're looking into the suicidal reports. There's like 150. Potential reports of liraglutide and semaglutide, maybe. And they're looking into it. We're going to know actually at the end of this month, and we'll probably do another podcast about it right when that comes out. I suspect, it's the package insert basically says to monitor mood and don't, you know, the new Zepbound one actually says don't start this medicine in somebody with a history of suicidal ideations or suicidal attempts. They're just being extra careful, but like, I don't know. I don't think it's the actual drug. Maybe I'm just, again, we don't make money yet, but like, I don't know. I don't think it's the drug. But I don't know.
Yeah.
We'll see. What else do we have to report? I think that's
I think, you know, another one that's, I think is important is adverse events leading to discontinuation of the medication.
Yeah.
So all these medications can drive, especially some nausea and some other GI issues, diarrhea, constipation. So GI disorders that led to discontinuation. This is the one thing that certainly favors placebo. So 10% of people stopped semaglutide versus 2% stopping placebo, which was statistically significant for GI disorders. I mean, that's basically...
Yeah, I think that's to be expected. I think, you know, I'm very upfront with people. These drugs are great, but like there are some people that won't be able to tolerate them. Well, you can do your best. You start them at the lowest dose possible. You give the best eating advice with these drugs. You give anti-nausea medicines sometimes if they're needing it. And usually reassurance, because over time that gets better for most everybody. But there's still going to be a small percentage of people that are like, the nausea is not worth it.
Yeah. And now in this big trial, you know, it's a clinical trial, so they have to be pretty strict. So, you know, I'm pretty sure they probably weren't giving people, you know, anti-nausea medication, et cetera, but they were able to kind of back off the titration a little bit to keep it, you know, in line with the trial ramifications. But, you know.
Yeah. Overall, good. So anybody, the quip that I make is when people say these drugs are so full of side effects, I'm like, yeah, reduce heart attacks. I think that's a pretty good side effect.
Yeah.
Reduce death, apparently. Yeah.
In those at the highest risk. So again, the more risk you have, the more benefit compared to the risks you're going to have. The lower the risk you have, then suddenly, you know, you don't have as much benefit compared to maybe some of the risks. So if you don't have obesity, if you don't have, you know, some risk of obesity-related complications that are going to get better, people without obesity need to not take these medications.
There
so
are
that
a
is
lot
not vanity.
Of people taking this for vanity weight loss. A lot of people.
Oh, and mind you, this is not compounded bullshit either, right? This is the real stuff. So don't get – I know that the cost – people are trying to sell, you know, these compounded counterfeit versions of this stuff. Who knows what that stuff is from China?
China.
Pronounced China.
China. Yeah. Anyway. I wouldn't do it. That doesn't pass the family test. I would give the FDA approved manufactured here in the United States, America. I would give that to a family member, but not the compounded stuff.
And unfortunately, there's a cost issue. We can talk all about it. We got to get someone on to talk about why the heck our costs are a problem.
Because we don't know what the hell we're talking about.
Well, I can't believe we allow millions and millions of dollars. Well, the commercials. We're the only country other than New Zealand
but the
that allows.
Yeah, we have these middlemen too. It's just a mess.
But still, think about how much
sense.
Money they spend on commercials.
Yeah.
And that could go to reducing the. Anyways.
They give maybe some good, you know, jingles.
Oh,
that's pretty good.
It is, but it costs millions of dollars.
Yeah, I don't know why we don't. They don't even need the market. They shouldn't even make any commercials. This stuff's going to sell itself. They're just printing money.
And most drugs do. They should teach. You know, doctors need to learn about it. And all right, well, you just went off on a horrible tangent.
All right, we'll do another one. Anyway, semaglutide. Before anybody asks, does this cross over to tirzepatide? We assume, but we can't make. We can't state that it does. The GI look.
Until that trial is out, we cannot say for sure.
It'll be out, a year or two? It's probably 2 years.
And, you know, and in all the phase 3 trials of it put together, it has the hint. It looks like it has the reduction, but that's not the type of trial that it needs to be. It will, we'll see. It'll take some time.
We will know. I'm confident, but I'm not going to, tell you that it's true 100%. So anyway, share this with a friend that's worried about side effects for these, and maybe someone who has cardiovascular disease who needs to lose some weight. Looking, and again, we don't make money from semaglutide or Novo Nordisk, not yet. But we just want to make sure everybody has the real.
Maybe they can sponsor this episode later.
Sponsor it. No, but sponsored by Novo Nordisk. Yeah, this is not, just so anybody, just to be clear. All right, bye.
This podcast is for entertainment and education and information purposes only. Remember, the physicians on this podcast are not your physician. It should not be considered professional or personalized medical advice. It should not be used to replace speaking with your physician or medical professional to discuss your specific health concerns. The topics discussed should not be used solely to diagnose or treat any condition. As a result, we are not responsible for any unwanted medical outcomes. The views and opinions discussed are of those of the host only and do not represent those of any other entities. We'll be right back.